what's life like with ADHD? What can you do to combat the chaos of your mind?
I, like people with ADHD, I just kind of get hyper-focused on one thing for a while and then, yeah, just be scattered and everywhere. So I guess looking back, school was like that. I'd do what I needed to do, but on the subjects I liked and the ones that were more, problem solving, because you could, kind of work out the solution. It was absolute rather than writing an essay or something.
How do you get control of your thoughts? How do you act in a disciplined way?
Yeah, if you maybe have ADHD or just have trouble with that focus and discipline, then you'll end up doing the things you want to do rather than the ones that you should do.
And also, how do you scale your business over the last 20 years in website design? So this is a strategic discussion about ADHD, about business, and about life. So we'll just kick into it, eh?
All right, let's go.
So as I was saying off air, I never know where this is going to go.
Yeah.
Man, I just badgered you for advice before we even kicked into it. But anyways, so just to start us off, what do you do, Tim? What's your...
So I've got a little web design company called Net Potential, and we do all sorts that's web-based. So started off just basic brochure sites way back in the day, and then just grew into more complex sites or sites that are more programmatic-centric rather than just, design-centric. So, these days pretty much all software runs in the browser anyway, so web developers pretty much are software developers anyway, so we think of ourselves as software developers, but we're mainly doing websites for people, and that's a mixture of e-commerce sites or brochureware sites, and then web apps to empower business.
Okay, cool. Yeah. You said that a few times. How many pitches have you made?
Well,
in your life,
I did not prepare for that.
You did all right. Yeah, I'll rate that. Yeah. You're programmed and with software. I like it.
Yeah.
So maybe let's understand you a little bit. What's where were you born? Where are you from?
I've got a little bit of a mixed background. Born in Wales. Mum's Indian, dad's Welsh. So yeah, grew up in Wales way back. I was born in the 70s, so that's giving my age away a little bit.
Yeah, quick math, 53.
Yeah, but then we moved. My parents migrated from Wales and went and lived in Zimbabwe for 5 years. So that was in the early 80s. And that was cool then. Like, I've got a very fond childhood memory of Zimbabwe. It was before the shit hit the fan, and life was good.
Is that Mugabe?
Mugabe.
Mugabe?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mugabe. Yeah. He has mummy issues, I found out.
Yeah. He's probably got a lot of issues.
Wow. Did you leave because of that? Or?
My parents would have. So I arrived there when I was about 5 years old and left when I was 11. So I was just a kid and, didn't really know anything about politics or what was going on. So, my parents were in and out. Like, they went there and probably saw that it was going sideways, so or down. And my mum had a brother here, so I've had an uncle in New Zealand that we'd visited, and I guess they liked New Zealand and migrated here.
What's school like in Zimbabwe that you can remember?
Oh, back in the day there, it was the cane and socks up, shirt tucked in. Like, if you're out of line, you'd get the cane, and socks down back, stripes at the back of the leg.
Jeez, my socks would always fall down. Yeah. I cracked it. Did you put the rubber band under the sock?
Yeah, I can't remember what we did. But you'd pretty much just do your best to stay in line. But I remember I had one teacher, and the punishment, she had this wooden ruler, and it was like whacking you on the head with the wooden ruler, but not flat, like sideways, like banging it down. You are naughty. You are naughty. And she'd like...
Wow, on the head?
Yeah, on the head.
Jeez. So you've forgiven it, or are you still holding...
Yeah, I can laugh about it. Just
what did you get in trouble for? What was the socks thing, or seems like you really gravitated to the socks thing.
I think I'd keep my socks up. I'd try and stay out of trouble, but I can't remember what it was that was trouble. Probably just being a kid doing something slightly creative that's not part of their rules, and there was enough in those days.
Because, you hear these entrepreneurs, they're not very school friendly. You know what I mean? Like, they're not. Were you a diligent, disciplined person with no ADHD? Or?
ADHD, I've been pretty much you know, people have diagnosed with me with that their whole lives, and yeah, I think recently, probably professionally, but yeah, it was. What's the question?
Yeah, no, that's right. So, what was school like for you? Like, were you good, bad? You struggled because it wasn't conformed for your way of being.
Yeah, I think I'd like people with ADHD. I'd just kind of get hyper focused on one thing for a while, and then just be scattered and everywhere. So, I guess looking back, school was like that. I'd do what I needed to do, but on the subjects I liked and the ones that were more. Yeah, problem solving, because you could, kind of work out the solution that was absolute rather than writing an essay or something. So, I like those kind of.
So you like subjects. Absolute answers, but when you get abstract, your mind goes a bit loopy, does it?
Yeah, I guess I can kind of understand abstract and design a bit, but I don't. Yeah, I'm not a designer, but yeah, I do like. It's an interesting question because, yeah, I do like. Creativity as well and not knowing.
Could you, what about like not knowing, so the outcome you can control and it's linear, but you don't know how that outcome's going to unfold, is that or you just like being creative? Because that's interesting, because you'd get confused or overwhelmed or confused or distracted if it's too abstract, but then you'll get bored if it's too linear.
Yeah, that's a good point, because if you can see the outcome, you can make the plan together and you kind of know what it is. But yeah, sometimes there's fun in kind of going, well, I don't, working out the outcome, I guess, along the way as well. But yeah, you need, I guess, something to reach for and know what you're trying to get to. But if you pivot along the way and something different happens, then that can be fun as well.
So what has been your lessons? Because some people, so you are actually diagnosed with ADHD?
I'd say so.
Yeah, I'd say so. You seem like you've got it.
I have,
So what's like, so some people might have that or like they might not recognize it. So what are some of the things you notice that led to you thinking it's ADHD?
That focus on one thing, that's either hyper-focused or not, and relatively scattered otherwise. Not being able to meditate that easily, like just actually trying to sit down and calm the mind and breathe. I think everyone probably suffers this, just the mind just goes crazy quickly and it is all over the place. But mainly just probably focusing and keeping things in order as well, like people with ADHD probably are a little bit more scattered in life in general.
Do you clean your room? Do you make your bed?
I do. Like the old Jordan Peterson thing, make your bed in the morning. So, but I do have bursts of like I'll clean the room really well. Like make the bed. Like that's got to be a daily discipline. And I find that if I didn't make it and it is just there, it is more inviting to just jump in if it's not made. So there is something about making your bed and. Having some discipline there, but my garage is a total mess. Like if you walk in there, like that's embarrassing. So there's areas that of life that you do need to kind of keep pretty well structured and have your routine, but then other places where it's just it's a organized chaos.
Organized chaos. Is that so? Just to sort of understand, because I don't know. I don't know if I have ADHD or if I have dyslexia or if I have anything or nothing. It doesn't serve me knowing, so I never try. But what is it like when you're trying to do something that's hard to focus? Like, what is your brain doing? Like, are you thinking a lot? Are you not thinking?
It's the natural part of the brain. I guess it does like to, have that reward, just dopamine hit. So it's quite often just going to the least resistive thing to do, which always isn't the best thing to do, especially in business when you're trying to organize different people and things. Like you'll gravitate towards the more fun thing or the thing that you'd rather work on rather than the thing you should work on. So when you are juggling lots of balls and there's lots to do, I think that's probably one of the symptoms, is just not going to the thing that you should be doing, even though you know you should be doing it.
What makes you not go down that route? Is it like, does it sound painful? Do you rationalize? Do you say to yourself, actually, this isn't as important, but then you think about it later and you're like, whoa, no, that was the thing I should have did.
Good question. I probably aren't thinking about it at the time, but if you did slow down and rationalize like that, you'd probably go, no, even though, yeah, I want to go and do that more fun, creative, exciting task, I need to do this one because of X, Y, Z. And yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, they're all different, wired in different ways, and some people would be more, they'd see that easier, like the discipline route, I've got to do this now and I can, yeah, maybe have time for those other things later. Whereas, yeah, if you maybe have ADHD or just have trouble with that focus and discipline, then you'll end up doing the things you want to do rather than the ones that you should do.
It seems to be a common thread I'm seeing in entrepreneurs, you know, that, you know, scatterbrain, new shiny thing, do the new shiny thing.
Yeah.
And then I was talking to a guy the other day about badges.
Yeah.
He's got like the biggest badge company in Auckland.
Yeah.
And they make 4,000 badges a day.
Wow.
And I'm like, what is your thing? He's like, yeah, I just call people up and I just say, I heard you need badges. He doesn't ask their name, just calls them up. And now he's got 6,000 clients.
Wow.
And he just has badges. He doesn't have a CRM.
Yep.
He doesn't have a like he's got 10 staff. They run it and he just turns up on Fridays, you know, just walks around the thing. He just likes to be there. He doesn't need to be there. And you hear these, for lack of a better word, I said it to him, boring businesses.
Yeah.
You know, where they just do one thing, one channel, one avatar, and they just stick at it. And that seems to be the ones that make it.
Yeah.
So how do you keep yourself in check? Like, do you do the whole, like, was it Mark Twain? Like, eat a live frog in the morning, the rest of the day sounds easy or whatever it is.
Yeah, I've struggled to do that part as well. Like, I'll always procrastinate and leave the, you know, that thing to last rather than first. But, yeah, do something uncomfortable every day. So one thing I do that's uncomfortable every day is have a cold shower in the morning. So I don't know if that actually helps me go and do the uncomfortable things at my desk that I should be doing, but yeah, it's kind of one discipline I've kind of brought in over the last few years, and yeah, trying to do that, do things that put you out of your comfort zone and do them first. So yeah, I think it would be good to, if you can bring that into your business life and do those uncomfortable things and get them out of the way, then yeah, it does free up your day to unfold into, it's a bit of a relief off shoulders. So yep, eat your frog first.
It's an art. I do the cold shower thing too. It's so good. People forget the most important part to me is keeping stillness in the face of adversity. So it's actually not doing the
it's which, like, is hard not to do.
It is an art,
especially in winter.
Those
first few seconds,
oh, it's tough. Well, this morning, so I've been invited to 2BNIs in the morning. One, I don't like changing my sleeping pattern. Two, I don't like group networking, hence why I do podcasts.
Right, yeah.
And it was dark, there was no sun, so I copped out.
Yeah.
I didn't do my cold shower this morning.
Yeah.
But like immediately I feel better. The other thing I do is when I wake up, I do some sort of movement in the light to get my cortisol and adrenaline going. And then my day and my mood. How have you seen cold showers help, or have they not helped at all and you still, because you're sick in the head? Or?
Yeah, I think it's hard to quantify, but I do think that it's helped my immunity, like I'm sick less. So, but I generally, you know, haven't been, it's hard to say that it's because of cold showers.
How do you feel after?
I always feel great after. So, yeah, getting in is always hard. Especially in winter, like I think, sometimes it's really enjoyable in summer, especially if you've just done some exercise, you know, it can be quite nice to jump in a cold shower. But generally, yeah, always hard getting in and always empowering getting out. You feel great afterwards, and it does give you a bit of a, you know, kickstart to the morning. And as you know, gets you and changes your state. So
I think there's also The way your body influences your sleep cycle is through temperature. So when you wake up, you're usually at your coldest. And then as you go throughout the day, you warm up. So funnily enough, having a cold shower makes you want to wake up earlier.
Right.
Yeah. And why it does that is because, sure, you're cold in it, but your body warms itself up after. So you start warming up faster than you normally would if you didn't have a cold shower.
Yeah.
So it's quite useful, especially if you're like jet lagged and you're trying to wake up earlier, that you get sun when you wake up, some sort of strong light, as well as the cold shower to phase shift forward your temperature cycle. Just Huberman Labs.
One of my favorite podcasters. Yeah, Huberman. Yeah, he's good. That's
What are the other ones?
Probably Joe Rogan, Jordan Peterson, Huberman. those trio.
You're gonna get cancelled now. You can't.
Yeah, exactly.
On the Jordan Peterson and making your room thing, he was telling a story about a guy that blocked a door. Right. Because he wanted to clean his house, and he blocked the door with a large broom or vacuum cleaner. So he had to walk around the door for months.
Yes.
Until he eventually did it. But what has been your biggest takeaways of having Jordan Peterson in your life?
Yeah, I've still...
Don't get cancelled, bro.
I still need to do... Like, he's got some good exercises, you know, these... self-discovery programs and stuff, and I did buy one of them back in the day. It was only like $29 or something. But yeah, doing those would be good. Like, actually, because he's got a lot of good teachings, and it's, you know, a lot of stuff that is just society have been saying for years, and a lot of things do go down to religious texts, which is look after yourself, be kind to other people. Treat other people how you want them to, how you want to be treated yourself as well. But yeah, his teachings, I think they're important times like this when it's everyone is online and they're, you know, it's, we're more connected than ever, but deep connections, we're probably less deeply connected with humans than we ever have been, even though we're more connected with humans than we ever have been. So there's probably a lot of spread out shallow connections anywhere, and I think people like Jordan Peterson are probably teaching people to look, you know, at themselves, because any connection, I think, is firstly you got to connect with yourself, and then you can probably connect with others more. But yeah, it's in a time where we're super connected but just not deeply connected.
Shallow. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people I meet, the people in their life don't actually know who they are. You know, they play this little game of fear of losing social status when they don't actually have any connection worth losing. You know what I mean? So they're fearful of being judged, so they hide a certain part of them, which increases their anxiety, and then they go home exhausted from all these social encounters because of the gap between how they feel and how they're acting. And it's something that I struggle with, is the emotional thing, is being genuine in how I'm feeling. And just doing that in the last year for me, connections with people is incredible, like friends, even romantically, being able to connect with someone on that level, and even business, like it transcends just doing things for the sake of money. You know what I mean? Like you feel as though they care and they've got your back. So what have been your, I guess, lessons in business as you've grown? Did you get the clients when you're whatever client you could handle, and then you got better clients, and then
pretty much. And I think you touched on something with what you said there. It's about caring and caring about what you do, and then what you do for other people in business, and ultimately making sure that you're adding something valuable to them. So, you know, it's good to offer a service, but if you're taking people's money, you want to make sure that you're providing a good level of service or value for that. 'Cause ultimately, the business over the years for me, there's been periods where it has just been like a job, and it's, you know, served its purpose. I've gone through, we've just had our 20th anniversary actually, so 20 years in business, and as a business owner and entrepreneur, you go through a lot of life in that time, right? So, I'm a different person to how I was when I started it 20 years ago. And then I've had three kids. They're, you know, all growing up now, but...
Do you hide your age so well? Like, do you get that a lot, brother?
I do, actually.
Yeah, I thought so.
Few people have said that recently, and I don't think of it. Age, you know, it is just a number, and I guess you just go through life, and suddenly you are middle-aged, and you're going, shit, yeah, I feel old now.
What do you what's your advice for, like, not aging? Do you have a routine, not stressing?
Well, I'm really feeling my kind of bones and joints and stuff. I've got a bit of a shoulder tear at the moment, and that's just, like, taking months to heal, and it's... Yeah, I guess the advice would be keep fit and healthy, you know, like, no, I'm certainly not practicing what I preach here, but eat well. Like, I eat far too much junk food and chocolate at night especially, but I think just eating well and having a good exercise routine is probably a good one for not feeling old or not aging.
What's your routine? Do you do sport or something?
Kids come along and life changes, but yeah, I do kite surf, but I've probably only get out a few times a year now. So whereas, you know, being people who don't have kids and responsibilities, you can get out whenever the wind's blowing, and Auckland's pretty good like that. So it's got it's pretty blessed when it comes to kite surfing spots and wind consistency. So
have you got in a dicey situation where you always got blown onto the road or something?
Yep. Yeah, in my early days.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
What went down?
Probably wasn't too dicey, but yeah, the wind was just blowing more cross shore than onshore. So the golden rule with kite surfing is you never go out when it's offshore, because you'll get blown out to sea if anything happens. So generally it's got to be onshore. This is way back when I was learning, but yeah, once it was kind of cross shore and the kite came down and I couldn't get it back up, and I was just blowing out but not coming back in. So someone with a kayak had to race and come and pull me back in slowly, but it wasn't just more embarrassing than life-threatning.
Yeah. Dude, those offshore winds, no joke about that. Like, I mean, So I used to be a kayak guide, so, like, we'd go and take people to see these humpback whales and like dolphins and stuff. But I was with my cousin when I was younger. We did this whole outing was fucked up. So first we decided, oh, we'll swim point to point, but we're just, like, open sea.
Yeah.
So we somehow pulled that off. Like, so it was just like, we were gone if we got pulled out, and then we're like, oh, we'll climb up this sheer rock face, don't know why. And every time we climbed, the rubble would pull away, so we'd start sliding, and then we'd have to hold on to gorse to get up it.
Oh god.
And then we got to the top and we couldn't get down, so we had to come back. And then we went and got on a kayak, and he was in the front. Oh, no, I was in the front, he was in the back. And we were getting taken off by an offshore wind. And then we got pulled in with a jet ski. So, yeah, that was a good lesson. I just sort of relate to you.
Yeah, and that wind can just take you places. And I guess that's a metaphor for life as well. Sometimes it's let go and go with the flow.
Surrender to the wind.
Yeah.
There you go. That's probably why. What was like when you first started your business? What was that like? When was that?
It was probably not very conscious, you know. It wasn't like, okay, well, here we go, I'm going to start a business. So I came back from, my background, looping back to Wales, Zimbabwe, moved here, and then, basically I'm call myself a Kiwi because I've lived here most of my life. But after university, went and did an OE, just did the usual thing and jumped on a plane to London. When I lived there for a while, and because I've got an English passport, being born in Wales, I didn't have any time constraints, but I didn't study computer science, so just did computer science at uni, and then when I got to England, it wasn't about, it was more about, you know, traveling and having fun. It wasn't about going in and settling into a career. And I didn't really have a career at that point because I just graduated uni and didn't really, you do uni and you kind of think you're going to do something. But then over there, I just fell into web development, really. So just started data entry and entering jobs into a website job board. This is before big job boards, and people were faxing in job ads, and I'd be typing them from the fax into a database, and then that was my day.
Wow.
So it was quite boring. Yeah. But they were like, so it was just literally a data entry job, but they did have this thing called Job of the Week, which was a fancy ad they put up each week. And they were paying like digital marketing agency over there in London, probably that's way too much. And I said, I can do that because studied a bit of HTML at uni. So started doing the Job of the Week, and then more and more and more. And then, yeah, slowly just fell into web development, really. And
had every second.
Came back and, yeah, just started the business. So I think your question was, yeah, how did you start out? And it was, you know, I came back from having worked in web development. It was just for one company, but in London for a while, and then tried to get a job back in Auckland. But it was at the end of that whole dot-com bubble burst and probably too many people in the market. Cause this was 2003, I think, I came back. So, yeah, there was probably a lot of people that had gone through that dot-com boom and bubble, came back to New Zealand, and I struggled to find a job, so I just started contracting, and the rest is history. So, yeah, I didn't really mean to necessarily start a web development business, but, yeah, it was easy enough to do, having had some experience in London, and just fell into it, and, yeah.
Hmm. What was your, I'm just, because this cuts off,
yep,
but
keep that awake, yeah.
So you come in, you're going to contract, and it just fell from the sky, or how did you get your first client?
Yeah, I had a friend who ran an art gallery, so they needed a website, so just kind of did one there. And back then, when you're starting out like that, you don't really have a network, so it is more who you know, and I think that goes a long way in business, you know, who your connections are, but yeah, when you're starting out, that's more important. So you're just some friend with a business who gets something done, and then they know someone, and yeah, they know someone, and it's just spreads slowly from there.
Slowly.
Yeah, and it's been a 20-year slog, but there's been periods of that where it has just been like a job. You know, I've been raising kids and needing to spend time with the family and that kind of thing, and the business is there, and it's okay, but it hasn't had anyone really at the helm driving it forward, so yeah, without that it can stagnate. But I've been lucky. There's generally enough work out there if you have got the right connections and go looking for it. Yeah, it sustained me over different life phases over those last 20 years, and
random
time to treat it like a business again.
Yeah, well, I was been following this course about how to get leads, and it's Alex Amosi's course.
Yeah,
and he was talking about referrals. That's because I think. He said it was like there's a 4x return on referrals because you get done. And people would tell me, like, I'd never ask for referrals. And people say I should because I've done sales and commission only sales for quite a while. And I never thought about how to do it. So, like, I think if someone's going to refer me a client, or someone wants me to refer them a client, I think about it. I'm like, I don't do it. I don't trust you. I'm going to look shit. Like, how do we, you know, earn that? And he had an interesting whole section on it. And an example he thought about, like, a referral, you want to enhance the status of the person that's referring on your behalf.
Okay.
So one of the things he talked about is as soon as someone becomes a client, you give them $500 off or whatever. For you, it might be $5,000 or something. And you give a, and you put a time limit on 7 to 14 days, and you say if you give this to a friend, they're going to get 5,000 off. And I've never had someone consciously think of how to incentivize a referral. And the fact that it's got a time limit, they got to use it. And because they're giving a $5,000 discount, you're adding to their status, provided they feel comfortable that you do something good. Another one he talked about with chiropractors, if you have a massage therapy, go to chiropractors and say, hey, any clients you have, I'll do the work for free, just the one session. So I'm wondering, have you ever thought creatively on how to incentivize?
Yeah, there's, it's good because they, you know, some advice you hear is referrals should come naturally and you shouldn't have to ask for them and offer something in return. But, you know, especially business owners and people, like, you want a good Google reviews or whatever. So if someone is searching online and they're comparing you to a competitor, and they can, they are quickly looking for things like that, like, you know, what has other people said about them? So I guess there's two things there. There's reviews and then there's referrals. So yeah, with your referrals, I think having a good referral system in place is important for a lot of business, because, you know, that is easier to drive your customer base if you have got others advocating for you. And, you know, I'm at a place where I'm considering hiring, possibly hiring a salesperson. It's like, well, what would you pay them? How is it going to work with a base salary and commission? And then you start to think about, well, if I could put that commission, or what I'd maybe be paying for sales, to your referral system, like, and pay someone else, you know, 10% for the sale or however much it is, then you do start to think about all those things. So yeah, good referral system. I think offering in this industry where you can be paying, you know, 30-50 grand for a for a custom website, and if someone can bring you that to the table, and yeah, there is definitely a commission that you pay for that, but then how do you quantify just leads versus people have had to work for the sale for? Because, you know, you could bring me 100 leads, but I might only be able to convert two of those. So I suppose, yeah, you need to balance your referral system with how much work you'd need to nurture, especially, yeah, when you are dealing with higher value sales. Yeah, that sales lead in time and process becomes longer. Yeah, the higher the value of the sale. So
yeah, I mean, it's on these to train salespeople. What you sell is hard to sell. And I think that that's the whole thing with service. Yours is a bit more of a commodity, a bit more productized. But essentially you're selling the outcome. So you think about it. So someone comes on, they don't want to know, you know, the software piece and you're going to do this functionality, blah, blah, blah. All they want to know is you understand their pain and that you'll achieve the outcome that they want.
Yep.
And how do they know that? Is because of the portfolios that you've got and all these sort of examples. He also, he told a story about one of the salespeople that was like killing it. Like he's doing like something like twice as much as everyone else. And they listen to his sales calls, and he's like, oh, it just sounds like everyone else. What's different? And so they asked them, and he's like, yeah, I just, it was an events company. He's like, I just say, is there any friend you want to come with you to the event?
Easy.
Isn't that crazy? And how many times do you ask? But because I think asking for a referral takes away goodwill in a way. So how can you ask in a way that enhances your goodwill in the market? Should we just strategize while we're talking shit on the podcast?
Yeah, that's good, because sometimes it's fine to just ask as well, like, be humbling. You know, there's been certainly, with having been in business 20 years, there are peaks and troughs, and it's like, okay, what am I going to do for the next 2 months? I've got not enough work coming in, got all these staff to pay, et cetera, et cetera. So, going out and saying humbly, please, can anyone
refer me business?
Yeah, does anyone know anyone who needs a site? And because you'd be surprised how much people in your referral in your network know. And it's just that I think us as Kiwis are probably less likely to ask for help when we need it. And there is that side of your referral network where they will be wanting to help you, ask for it, but you don't want to, I guess, sound too desperate and like, help, we're a sinking ship, we need all the life support we can get. There's definitely a balance there, and I don't know what the secret is, but I think having a referral system in place for a lot of businesses is something that a lot of us just don't think about and implement, because it is our best source of sales, right?
Yeah, well, it's the best thing you can add, and it's the highest return of your time.
Yeah.
There's a guy that, just on the credibility, Mortgage HQ, they got some like 200 Google reviews, which is nuts in New Zealand. And all he does is, it's a little easier with mortgage because it's free, you're getting commission from the productization product that you offer. But he would, after he signs up a client, he would say, he'd buy them a restaurant, something to a restaurant. And then when he gives that coupon to them, hey, and it's automated, hey, thank you so much for being a client. Mm. If you had a good experience, we'd love to get a Google review, which does two things. Is one, you get the Google review because you're exchanging something for the ask.
Yeah.
And then you're getting referrals because they're going there and talking about who paid for this restaurant thing. Oh, these mortgage guys. So, even if someone wants me to refer them business, I get the shakes, what are people going to think of me?
Yeah, that's it. You need to be advocate for the people that you're sending someone to, especially if they're going to spend a lot of money. Because, if they have a bad experience, they'll be like, why do you tell me to go to that guy? I know what you mean.
So how, and the other thing he talks about is, what value is, I talk about this a lot because I'm just obsessing over him, because he's just, half a million people went to his event.
Wow.
And it was a pre-book launch about how to get leads. And he's like, this is how I got you here, using these processes, and walked them through everything. So he's really good at it. And he talks about value. And what value is, he broke it down to four things. Is one, desired outcome, which, let's say, website or reputation, whatever that is. Likelihood of achieving that, which is testimonials, proof, trust. Then the other one is time, how long it takes to get that outcome. So you look at a lot of things like Netflix and Amazon, they're really successful because it requires very little, like they get the outcome very quickly. And then effort. So how do you get a client to do as little as possible, achieve the outcome as quick as possible, and they feel confident that you achieve it? So, you got something?
No, it's all right. It's a balance, isn't it? All those, because when you're selling different things, like there's low volume, high throughput and consumables, and then with us, there is that high, it is a high investment, high ticket value item, and maybe something that's in their budget for 3 years or whatever. So but with Alex and Mosey, I think a lot of the clients he works with, like for gyms, for example, where you are, there's the lifetime value of a customer and how many of those you can, or how much it's worth paying for those customers to come through the door. And I think where you can get really good with the formula there is when that's all nice and easy to kind of put values on and absolute, then it becomes like a system that you can, if you feed more money in at the top, then you get more money kind of printing out at the bottom, and that is a dream. Because it makes sense, if you can pour $100 in and get $200 out, then why not? And just keep turning that tap right on. So I've thought about that, for our business, and you do look at similar, marketing options and techniques. And I think it's all down, it all does come down to effort and basically putting in the work in, because, you know, there's no magic wand that you're just going to be able to wave and throw some money at it and it do the work for you. Yes, there are systems that will do a lot of work for you, but you still got to actually get up and drive it and do the work. And I think, that's what I've basically learned is, it comes from actually sitting down doing the work. Even though you've got these systems that you can make work for you, it's still actually about getting up, making your bed, doing the work.
Making your bed, have the culture.
Yeah.
I posed this to a friend that does website company, Control Shift, that's what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, how long does it take you to make a website? He's like, I don't know, 2-3 months, something like that. It's all custom. I was like, how could you do it in 7 days?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, but you're limited by the people and they need to get the design assets and they take too long and then you got to get the right designer and match them up. And I was like, but how would you get around that? If you were banned, if you only had an hour with the client, because that whole effort thing. He's like, well, what do I actually do? And he actually pivoted, which is cool. He's like, I'm just going to work exclusively with agencies and designers, so they've already got it all sorted, and I'll just do the development part. So then he can do that turnaround really quick and charge more.
Yeah.
But the other, another idea is the client-funded acquisition. So the challenge you face is you bring on a salesperson and they'll get a sale in 5 months, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, you've chewed up the cost, or meanwhile, you've chewed up their life savings because they're commission only.
Yeah.
So how do you have a front-end offer that is easy to sell, delivers quickly, and let's say it's a grand?
Mm-hmm.
So you have these Facebook lead ads, cost you, you know, $200 to get a sale, but then you're funding that acquisition with their grand product. So I'm wondering, is there like a low-hanging fruit that you could keep your salesperson alive while they're winging it?
Yeah, I think you can. Yeah, if you work out certain things that you can sell that are easier and that would keep them alive, but because those the high-value sales things, they do have that long pipeline as well, or lead-in time.
Ideally you want it to be part of the stage, so they stage one they pay a grand, stage two they pay the 40 grand. You know what I mean? You don't want it just to be something that takes it away, but it's part of a problem that you solve. So is there a problem in the chain that's not as costly in time investment for you, but is something people would pay for?
Quite often when we're looking at what the problem is or where the strategy is for businesses is, yeah, they need to sort out their website before they drive traffic to it, right? So if they drive traffic to it and there's a critical error or issue with them converting or getting from a visitor to someone filling out the form to book a consultation or whatever, firstly you need that optimized first, and then there probably are lots of little things that you can do to, like, if we just tweak this here, then that might double our people filling out the form, for example. So with us, building that foundation website right first before people get there and so investing money to get there. I'm not sure what the easy, quick thing is in that process that we could do. But I think that's where you do have to step out and look at holistically what's this business trying to do with their whole online marketing strategy and website and online presence. And,
cause you're selling
and work
money.
Out a plan there, and then not try and do everything at once, because I think somewhere your question's leading to is, basically getting something up and running quickly, because it's never going to be necessarily finished. A lot of businesses, they'll pivot along the way and change their services or sell something different. Just remembering that, making that start and not trying to launch your website with exactly how you want it to be all perfect. A lot of customers still, ones that we're talking to, you know, now get hung up on that. It's like, well, you don't need to worry about all that now. Just, yeah, get it launched and you can do all those other things later. But I think some people have a mindset problem where, yeah, they just want to do it, get it done, and then leave it. And not nurture it afterwards as well. So with websites and, yeah, your digital marketing, it's an always changing thing, and you just keep working on it, really.
Yeah, well, it's iterations, eh? It's like, you know, let's say you're the best website designer known to man and you sort of understand human behavior and you only have one niche, so you're like really, really compelling at making these websites that convert.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, the behavior of the website visitors will change over time.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to make iterations so that you compare data as opposed to speculation. Because all your competency is a collection of prior data that enabled you to guess pretty good.
Yeah.
And if they just leave it, but no one actually goes to websites, you know, like, unless it's run well. Like, they do, they search it, they make their decision based on the reputation of it. People do it before they come on the podcast. Who the fuck is Ryan? What does he do? Yep. They Google it and then realize my website's down. But like, I always wonder that, hey, what do you say to them? Like, so they're like paying this, you know, this money, and then they might only have like 100 website visitors. Or do you ever look at that, or do you not look at that and you just sell reputation?
No, that's, yeah, it's definitely important to look at. So, yeah, having that strategy around how to get your website visitors and convert them. And that can be really hard in some industries that are, you know, very competitive. It's just hard to get noticed, and you've got to spend a lot of money. So you need that marketing budget. And that's where adding that value and having that return on investment is really important, because, yeah, we've seen clients that can, you know, pour $5,000 a month into Google Ads and not make sales. You know, literally just the website's not selling. And it's like, yeah, how do you answer that and say, yeah, keep going, you know, it's going to be okay after a year? And I don't know the answers to that. And we work with some good digital marketing agencies that specialize in all that. But
who's good? Can you feel comfortable saying anyone?
Because
it's hard to find good ones.
It is, and I think it comes back down to, yeah, working with people that care about what they're doing and just care about their clients. So we've worked with Conversion Marketing for quite a while, and yeah, they're in Takapuna, but found them, yeah, always to have that client care about their the outcome, and making sure the ownership of all the Google accounts and all that's with the clients. So I think that's important, no matter who you kind of get into bed with, so to speak, business wise these days. Is you know, we see this in software. It's like making sure you have got source control repositories available so that you can just take that and continue on with someone else if you need to. Where was I going? It's gone full circle, but yeah, caring about your customers and clients. And yeah, I think as long as you care and can add ROI, then should be all good in business.
Yeah,
it's life in general. Yeah, well, care about what you do.
Well, I think we get a little lost in that in business. Is like, you know, if your product or service is helping businesses, your job is to make them money.
Yeah,
there's like, we could pretend the woo woo and like, oh, we all care about the quick, which is me at heart, you know, the hippie.
Yeah.
But if you're not getting money quickly and quantifying that in some way, then you're selling your trust and goodwill. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, the challenge with websites is, if you're not getting quantifiable return on investment, then you're training your relationship with them in exchange for that not happening.
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, lawyer, I'll do your website. You won't make any money from it, but I'm a good guy. Or, you know, or like, is there a way to get results quick? Or what's something that you've seen that where it's like, boom, got some leads?
Yeah, I think one of the more interesting areas that service, I guess, where you want to provide to clients where you can prove results quick, is with what work a system can do that they're manually doing, like, currently. So, yeah, that's like, if you systemize and do all these things, then, you know, that can keep Jane Doe in the office on other tasks because she won't have to do any of that. So I think
with your
business systems and software systems, that's easier to show get results quick than necessarily something that's got more of a longer term marketing effort where, yeah, it is a, you know, can take months or years.
Could you come into a business like and just be like, so here's this redundant process, mm-hmm. let's use your website and then we'll free up this time? Like, is there tangible ways you can do that?
Yeah, there is, and I think these days you'd probably see a lot less with things like accounting systems and you know, invoices coming in and all the manual stuff that was around there. But yeah, you can go in, and there are probably a lot of businesses that are doing things a lot more manual these days, where it's easier to make an impact quickly. But then, you know, there's a lot of businesses that have kind of adopted digital transformation to some extent, and they are doing it. And then within those, there'd be even more areas of streamlining and improving and systemizing. But depends what area, you know, is it freeing up someone else that can do more customer service, you know, personal customer services tasks, or are we trying to aid the marketing and sales department and actually sell? And I think that's where, yeah, that whole measurability, it can become harder, but you just got to be smarter around how you target your customers, how much you're paying for them, and how you measure that spend to conversion and lifetime value of them.
Okay, I get it. You've done 50 minutes, FYI. Well, so we'll finish soon.
Okay, no, that's all right.
You've done well.
Goes quick.
I'm just wondering, because the two ways I can see to sell websites is you either increase return on investment really quickly or you have a functional improvement in the processes of their business. Yep. And you talked about software as actually website, you know.
Mm.
Is there an example where you've improved something, like where I can get it? Because I'm not quite getting.
Yeah.
I like someone opts in, or you have a payment gateway and invoices generated through the website that flows into a CRM or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are those that you do?
We've recently built a web app for PhotoLife. So they're the company that takes photos at all, you know, schools and kids events. So they were doing everything quite manual, like with spreadsheets and sending around PDF papers on, you know, Friday afternoon for the next week's jobs. And so an example of coming in and actually streamlining and taking a load off would be with that project, where it's all in a CRM. There's a job management system. All the staff are assigned, you know, their jobs, and they can go see on a dashboard straight away where they're working, when, and click on the job and click on links to get driving directions, and it's all right there for them, which was, they were doing all that and surviving in the past with a lot of, you know, manual ways. And so that's an example where you can see the software solution that you implement work straight away, and not only has it lifted a load on a lot of manual things that they were doing, but less likelihood of errors. So, you know, double booking someone somewhere or leaving somebody with no work for one day, it's much easier to see those holes and gaps. And then, yeah, they can basically focus their time on other parts of the business, because, you know, all this time that's been used manually, working out things that can be systemized does give people the opportunity to free up other time.
What's the most expensive thing in a business and the most valuable is staff.
Mm.
And I think that because that's a quick low-hanging fruit. I mean, obviously there's a lot of development, it takes process, but if there was like a niche, is there a consistency of a problem you solve that you could solve very quickly? You know, whether it's like invoicing, whether it's fucking contact forms come in and it goes through this process.
Yeah. Again, if I'm thinking back to what we typically have been doing for clients, it's they're often quite, there's uniqueness along the way for them. So with that example for PhotoLife, I think where you kind of are solving a problem and you can see something that you can maybe repeat for someone else is just helping out with the whole bigger picture look and system. So for them, it's like a CRM where they can now communicate faster with their clients and book them in easier for next year, that kind of thing. So they are, all those things are quite unique about business, but yeah, being able to look at patterns of where we can help, like introducing a CRM and a marketing automation system so that they don't have to worry about what happens when a client, you know, arrives at their website or passes through the checkout, what happens, you know, a week later or 2 weeks later, all those things. Systemizing all those is where a difference can be made.
Because I've been fascinated about website development since I just randomly called a whole lot of agencies, and now I'm talking to a lot of website development people. And the challenge I see is like your business grows through reputation, but you have no influence on who you're, you know, getting the referral from, and you need that project to keep the business going, but there's a long period without money.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if there was some sort of targeted process that you clearly fix as your front-end offer. So it's like maybe not the photo people, maybe something else. Maybe it's accountants. We can when inbound correspondence comes in from a client, it categorizes it this way and this is the output. And because it's templated, you can be really targeted on that, and you can do ads on that, and you can get cash flow really quickly, then sell them websites.
Yeah.
Because you can get that ROI, because you're like, hey, we'll charge you the hours you save with this person. We quantify that as 20. What do you pay them? Oh, we pay them 1,000 for, you know, 20 hours. That's good living, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there are a lot of opportunities where you can systemize that conversion for them. But yeah, it is just like a, what is the secret sauce? Because if we could all work out how to quickly, you know, turn $100 into $200, then everyone would be doing it. And that's where I think it does come out to hard work, not just on us as the agency that are kind of offering some solutions, but then you need that follow through from everyone in that business and the business owners there. And then,
Well, the challenge is you do these big projects, it's hard to hire lots of staff, so you use contractors when they come in, so you're not stuck with this person. And then you make these beautiful websites, and then you learn you don't want to have cheap clients because they ask for more, and it's a lot of investment, so you go more expensive. So it all goes that route. And then even if you're good, the value given the website is more they feel good about it as opposed to its ROI. Some do really good ROI. But if you can do that functional component, like, hey, we use your website as a functional way to save you time. Anyways.
Yeah, working on it.
Yeah, let me know, because I want to crack it. I just find it an interesting model. But I like to abruptly end podcasts for retention. So thank you for coming on.
Yep, no worries. Yeah, thank you for having me. Interesting.
Yeah, cool, man.
Yep.